Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 376 of the podcast. And it's Friday, 18th of May, as I record this, 2018. Yes. So today I have an interview on the motivation myth, how high achievers really set themselves up to win, with Jeff Hayden, who is a freelance writer with Inc. magazine. And he actually has some really interesting insights to share on using writing as a side hustle before moving into it as a career, and how important routine and process are for a successful creative life. And I really enjoyed talking to Jeff, and definitely just a different insight into the world of writing. So in publishing news this week, there's been quite a few shakeups, and I know from what I've been reading in the community, quite a lot of people feeling unsettled by this. So first of all, Kindle Worlds has shut down, something I'm actually not surprised about. When some of these other shutdowns have happened, and you know, mostly I'm not surprised. And this is something since the beginning I have wondered about, because I've heard from a lot of smaller, in inverted commas, authors co-writing with bigger names that they never see crossover sales. So I always thought the Kindle Worlds idea must be flawed. Also, I'd heard from many people within it that it wasn't quite going as expected. So I don't think this is a surprise for people within Kindle Worlds, but it's definitely, another shift. The Indie Author Support Network, a new organisation headed by Marie Force, who is one of the sort of long-standing big name indie authors, is trying to help authors struggling with some of the KU scams right now. A number of accounts being shut down again. Lots of disgruntled people talking about this. KU in general, full of many issues for authors who are doing things right and not having a good time. But the Indie Author Support Network is a great new organisation advocating for authors with the distributors. And it has a very focused approach, really. You know, it is based on sort of, you know, talking to Amazon and Apple and everybody about how indies are treated, and making it more equal. And I think the organization sits nicely alongside the Alliance of Independent Authors, which has a broader focus on advocating in the wider publishing industry. I think the Indie Author Support Network is kind of ignoring the publishing industry and really just talking straight to the distributors. So it's interesting how these two fit together. The Alliance obviously works also towards educating authors towards making a living with their writing, and I'm part of both. So if you're interested in the Indie Author Support Network, then check it out at indieauthorsupportnetwork.com. And that, I think, is a really great move, and it'll be interesting to see how things change, but it's good to see Marie and her team fighting on behalf of many KU authors, and also getting involved in the intellectual property stuff around trademarks that is still ongoing. It's all going off in the romance community. And again, it's really another interesting thing that has happened, and partly to do with the fact that romance has always been ahead of everybody else, is that RT, the Romantic Times, is shutting down after 37 years, and the owner is retiring from publishing. And Shelf Awareness reports that there might be another convention to replace the physical RT conference, which has been one of the cornerstones of the romance conferences in the US. Now, I bring this up, I mean, a company that's been run for 37 years where the owner is retiring, this is not a surprise. It's just come off, you know, at the same time as all these other changes. And why I wanted to mention it, first of all, can you even imagine how much change this the lady has been through, the woman and her team who run RT, 37 years. And I calculated, and I hope this is right, that 2055 is 37 years from now, and I'm going to be 80 years old, which is kind of crazy. I fully intend to still be alive, barring any accidents. but essentially, 37 years, I just can't think of the changes we're going to have in the next 37 years. So if you imagine the RT starting up 37 years ago in the publishing industry, the world is so completely different now that it's kind of not surprising they're shutting down. So they've said that their website will be available for another year and then will then go dark. And why I wanted to mention all this again is I've seen a lot in the author forums and Facebook groups and stuff, people very agitated by all of this. And I've talked about this before, but I thought I'd mention it again because I felt ripples of that agitation as obviously last week I talked about personal situation and family things going on. And this kind of agitation in the community has made me look again at my business model and how I'm investing and looking at ways to broaden my income base in case of things happening. Well, I say in case of things happening, things will happen. Life moves on. So whether that is personal circumstances, you know, whether it's you or I getting sick, whether it's a loved one getting sick, whether it is changes in the industry that impact our income, you know, even if you have a job, you know, a proper in quotation marks job, changes in the industry means that can go wrong. There are always going to be changes. And the most important thing is to understand and to look after ourselves for a start. For me, that means going to bed more often, sleeping a lot more. I have literally been going to bed at sort of 8:30 every night and sort of lying there and, you know, resting a lot. I think resting is very important. But also looking at, okay, so how do we manage our income, but also make sure that we are protected in case of change. So I know that's not very specific, but I wanted to mention some of those publishing changes. And also our response cannot be, you know, the Chicken Little, the sky is falling, everything's going wrong. It has to be how we react to those changes. And as always, I try and keep a positive spin on things. I'm fully intending to still be writing in 2055. I can't promise I'm going to do this podcast for the next 37 years. But hey, we're well into the ninth year. The 10th year, I guess. Well, no, the ninth year. I started in 2009, so next year will be 10. So you'd never know. Okay, so moving on to my personal update. So thank you so much for all the very kind emails and lovely comments on last week's show. And many of you sent, you know, emails about your own heartrending situations. And it is, I guess it's comforting to know that as a community, we all go through these things. I mean, life events happen. There is a path to life and death, and we all go through it, and for ourselves, but also with our loved ones. And remember, if you're going through these difficult times, then writing is always a way to deal with it, or at least take yourself through the situation onto the other side, or while it's still happening. And I'm certainly writing a lot at the moment. Not that writing is necessarily going to be part of anything, but journaling is something that I always find helpful. I am definitely glad that I scheduled an extra month for the preparation of how to write nonfiction, because I actually finished the manuscript at the end of April. I'm just trying to remember what month we're in. Okay, we're in May. All right, so I finished the manuscript at the end of April, and then I've been going through the print formatting, and we're now on the third iteration of the print book, because I found, you know, when you proof it in PDF and then you proof it, you know, and then you send it back with the comments, you get the next proof. And then I printed it, and then I got the proof copy, and there were still changes. So we've gone back on that. Also doing the workbook, and doing the workbook is a pain, but I know it will be worth it, because this is one of those books that, you know, you can definitely do as a workbook. So I'm doing the workbook edition, gonna do a large print as well, because I just put a video up on my YouTube channel. youtube.com/thecreativepen about doing large print editions for the Penny Appleton romance. And I looked at the first year of the first book, which is Love Second Time Around by Penny Appleton, if you like sweet romance with mature protagonists. And 36% of the income for Penny's first year was large print books. So I think that's just fascinating. Something like more than double the normal size print edition. So fascinating. And I've discovered through Amazon ads and things like that, that people are looking for large print editions. So I will be doing large print for How to Write Nonfiction, as well as the normal size print, the workbook, the ebook. I'm QAing the audiobook. I'm doing a course. This is multiple streams of income in action, everyone. And of course, you're welcome to model what I do. It's interesting. I'm trying to turn this material into every possible way that you could possibly want to consume it. Funnily enough, as well, with the audio side. That's the other thing that's thrown a spanner in the works this month, as well as life things, is that we've got roadworks outside our flat. So between 8 a.m. and 4 p.m. every day, they're drilling outside, which is why at the moment I'm recording in my closet. But basically, I've been getting up really early and doing that. So the audiobook is obviously a professional narrator reading the book. So that's going to be on Audible. That will be in a normal audiobook. And then the course is full on video course on all the topics covered in the book with a whole load more stuff. But also I'm going to do downloadable audios of each of my lessons, so that if you enjoy this section of the show and you enjoy my sort of riffing on various topics, that's what you get in the course. I am essentially covering the topics, but I'm also riffing on things as I go through. So that's the sort of work side of things. Also this week, I have been to a couple of events as part of the Bath Festival, which is a really annual thing with lots of artists and poets and authors. It's very literary. I saw Amanda Palmer in concert. And if you don't know Amanda, she's an incredible musician, but also known in the author community for her book, The Art of Asking, her TED talk, and also for the fact she's married to fantasy author Neil Gaiman. And Amanda has been an independent musician for years and was one of the first to use Kickstarter for an album. And now she was talking, and I support her on Patreon, and she runs her creative business pretty much through Patreon. She embraces her independence and her community and her vulnerability. And it was very interesting listening to her talk at the show and talk about how important Patreon is for her as an independent artist. And The Guardian had an article on Patreon in the last week or so. And it's definitely much more sustainable than Kickstarter, because what she said was her Kickstarter was a huge amount of effort and she kind of burnt out after that. She did the album and then, you know, things really changed in terms of doing the TED talk and the book and everything. But the Patreon means that lots of people investing less money means that people don't have so many demands, but also that she can put out something once a month rather than this really, really massive thing. So I just wanted to thank everybody who supports this show on Patreon, and just really, I appreciate it so much. And I want to have a look at how I can use Patreon. I mean, Amanda has moved her blog pretty much onto Patreon now, and she's really using that as her community. And it's definitely something I'm thinking about. How can I, embrace that model in a much more sustainable way, so that you get more benefit. And I'm really just concentrating a lot on people who are supporting me. So I really, it's fascinating to hear what she's doing. If you haven't had a look at Patreon yet, then go and have a look. It's fascinating. Lots and lots more authors on it now, poets, podcasters, musicians, artists, comic book, graphic novelists. And it's fascinating. So definitely check it out. The other event I went to was just a discussion with poet Ben Okri, who is Nigerian British. And I first encountered Ben in 1999, and I got the book off my shelf. The book is called Mental Fight, Book of Poems for the Millennium. And I have a signed copy from him, and I saw him in 1999. And that one of the poems in there helped me make the decision to leave my job. So I actually resigned on my 25th birthday, which was March year 2000, and went traveling. And that decision really changed my life. I didn't come back for 11 years. But it's interesting because I reflected as I was sitting there, you know, having seen Amanda Palmer and then going to see Ben. If Ben had a Patreon, I would support him. But it's very interesting because over the years, I've bought his books. I have attended events probably 3 or 4 times over, 18 years. I've recommended him. I've gifted his books. And I have never been on his email list. And this really struck me because of all the remnants of the GDPR stuff that I've been doing. Many of you who, you know, I've done everything. I've pretty much done everything now, she says. One more thing I have to do. But I have done all my forms and, you know, I've done some cleaning of my lists and all of that type of thing. But I have been tearing my hair out a bit about the whole thing. And I said to Jonathan one evening, wouldn't it be interesting to get rid of email altogether? So what Amanda's doing with Patreon is that, you know, when you use Patreon, it sends out email for you. So a really interesting idea. And when I saw Ben, he actually had a really interesting anecdote of his latest book. Well, he has two books out at the moment. One is an anthology of political poetry called Rise Like Lions. And then he has another book, which is his writing with a painter. And he was talking about taking this box of writing to the bank and the bank saying, no, that needs to be a book. And of course, it was a metaphor, but it was very interesting that he brought up how he makes money from his writing and how he had to turn it into a book for the bank to, you know, be interested. And I like the idea of him talking about that. But it's so fascinating because I'm a fan of Ben, have been for 18 years. And you know, I'm not like a rabid fan. I'm not stalking him all the time, but I bought many of his books and talk about him. And yet I can't support him any more than just buying his books. Whereas Amanda, I haven't bought any of her music, but now I'm supporting her on Patreon. I feel like, yeah, that's really good. I feel happy to be part of her community. So these are just some things I was feeling off the back of, you know, the shakeups with KU and things shutting down and things changing. And okay, well, what are some of the ways that as independent creatives, we can be making income and serving people, continuing to serve people, continuing to make our art, but also paying the bills? Happy times indeed. Right, so thanks for all your emails and tweets this week. Hello to Terry Linhart, who says, I'm listening to your podcast while mowing on my property near South Bend, Indiana, USA. Sent me a picture of his ride-on mower. And hi to Gisela, listening in Brazil. Your podcast helped me to understand indie publishing. I walk along the beach garden with my dog in Santos, state of Sao Paulo. Thanks, Gisela. Rachel McCollin McLean says, one of the lovely tweets. This week's podcast brought a tear to my eye. Glad your entrepreneurial career can help you support your family, Joe. Thank you, Rachel. Henry Hyde says, really enjoyed the conversation with T. Thorne Coyle. I love the notion of using capitalism to undermine capitalism. Nowadays, artists can really make a difference. Oh, Marion says, thanks for constantly mentioning about going wide as an indie author and that there is a global marketplace for our books. It really does change your perspective once you embrace that reality. And Marion has been traveling in Europe as an American and really loving Europe. So that is fantastic. And just a couple more. Laurie London says, I love it when the creative pen says, hello, creatives, at the beginning of her podcast. Makes me feel happy when I set off for my walk. Thanks, Laurie. And I didn't used to say it. And then someone was talking about, I can't remember who it was, like, you should have a name for your tribe. So creatives are you guys, you're my tribe. And finally, Ellen Oaksmith says, listening to the podcast in the car wash, which is very cool. So remember to let me know what you're doing or where you are in the world when you're listening to the show. Tweet me at The Creative Pen or leave a comment on the show notes. And remember, there's always a transcript and all the links are in the show notes and you can find them at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can always find all the notes there. Right, today's show is sponsored by Ingram Spark. And funny I should mention Ingram Spark because I have been spending a lot of time publishing on the Ingram Spark website this month and am heading back today to publish my workbook. So I do different sizes now. So I do the 5x8 paperbacks for my large books. I do the large print, which are like, I haven't got in front of me, but it's like 6.14 times something. And then I do the 6x9 for the workbook and other things like that. I have lots of different sizes now, and you can do more sizes on Ingram than you can do on CreateSpace or KDP Print. Ingram also do hardbacks, which I'm still considering. I haven't done a hardback yet, but they are awesome. And in fact, next week, I'm going to be talking a lot more about print options. I'll come back to that. I'll mention that at the end of the show. They also have really great help and a podcast now. The podcast is called Go Publish Your Yourself, which I think is brilliant. And if you want to, talking about going wide, talking about protecting your future and the possibilities, I actually think that indies getting more into print is a big deal. And if you want to sell to bookstores, universities and colleges, libraries and anywhere that requires a discount, then you can use Ingram Spark and your books will be available in the catalogues alongside other retailers. You can also order author copies and bulk copies at a great price, often with reductions for volume. So they are fantastic for live events or selling direct. So it's your content. Do more with it through ingramspark.com. Right, thanks to everyone supporting the show on Patreon. Thanks to new patrons, Ellen McCoy Batty, Just for Today, which is Tom Evans's latest mindfulness project, Orna Ross, thanks Orna, Tristan White, and to Cindy Sherman for increasing her pledge. I really do appreciate the Patreon support, as I talked about before with Amanda Palmer. It really demonstrates you enjoy the show and want it to continue, and increasingly it's becoming more and more important to me. And you can support the show on Patreon for just a couple of dollars a month or whatever you like. And you'll get the extra monthly Q&A audio, which I will be recording soon. In fact, I might even have recorded it by the time this goes out. And if you are a Patreon supporter, you'll get that and the whole backlist. So you can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Right, let's get into the interview. Today, I'm here with Jeff Hayden. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. It's great to have you on the show. Just a little introduction. Jeff is an author, ghostwriter, speaker, LinkedIn influencer, and contributing editor to Inc. magazine. His latest book is The Motivation Myth, How High Achievers Really Set Themselves Up to Win, which is a fantastic book. And Jeff, I got to tell you, I read the advanced copy that you sent me. I also bought it in hardback. That's how good it is.
That makes you my new best friend.
And it's interesting because when I read books that I think, yes, I want to remember that I read that, I'm now buying books in print again because I'm kind of more settled. So it's really interesting. But let's wind the clock back. I'm fascinated by your background. How did you go from manufacturing to writing? Give us a bit of a potted history.
Wow. Okay. I worked my way through college in a manufacturing plant. That's how I paid my way through college. And I really liked it. And when I graduated, I looked around for jobs and it seemed like all of them were with 40-year-old men working in cubicles. And at the time, that seemed horrible. You know, of course, now I'm way past 40, so it would be awesome to be that. But I just couldn't see it. And there was another plant in the town that I lived in that had just started up. And it turned out to be an R.R. Donnelly plant. They're the world's largest commercial printers. And actually, they print tons of books. Half of the books behind you, they probably printed in one of their factories. And the plant was just starting up. And so the HR manager where I was working said, you know, if you want to do manufacturing, you should go over there because you can ground up. So I thought, okay. So I started on the shop floor as a entry-level worker. So I was the college boy, which was okay. And my goal was to be, I wanted to run a plant, you know, aim high, right? Mm-hmm. So I worked my way up, went through a lot of different jobs, a lot of different roles and responsibilities, finally found myself running a plant. 3 years into that, I found myself not wanting to run a plant anymore. Not that it was a bad job and not that the people were bad or anything else, but I just wanted to do something different. There's a longer story there, but it's, I guess, and I won't tease that. I'll just say it. People would come into my office and within a sentence and a half of talking to me, I would know where the conversation was going to go, what I was going to end up saying, all the things that were going to happen, but I needed, it took 20 minutes to get there because you have to listen and you have to empathize and you have to, you know, and I just wanted to say, shut up, go out and get along with Joe and do your job, you know, but I couldn't do that.
You didn't want to be a manager, basically. And,
well, I had, it's sad to say because, you know, everyone aspires to be a leader and I had aspired to be a leader, but I got to the point where I didn't want to lead. And I thought, if that's how I'm feeling, then I'm not serving the people that I am supposed to lead. And so I was whining about the fact that I didn't love my job anymore. And, you know, my wife would say, well, then do something different. And I would whine and she would say, do something different. And so finally she said, what do you want to do? And I said, well, you know, I think I would like to write, which seemed really strange because the only thing I had ever written were things that I wrote for work. So I didn't go to school, none of that. So, you know, I whined for about 6 more months. And one day she came home and she said, okay, you said you wanted to be a writer. I got you your first job. I met a guy who needs a press release for his company. And I thought, I don't know how to write press releases. I, you know, and this is not pre-internet days, but it's early internet days. And so it was kind of hard to find press releases to use for an example. And so it's the worst paying job I've ever had. Because it took me probably 5 hours to write this one page press release. You know, and I think I made the princely sum of like $40 or something like that, you know. So I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, okay, here's what I make at my real job. Here's what I made for that. But it was interesting and he liked it and he hired me to do a few more things. And I thought, well, let's just give this a go. So I didn't quit my full-time job because I think that's foolish. You know, if people say, wow, you've got to go all in. And I think all in is good at some point. But you really do need to prove that there is a business there for you. And so I would work nights and weekends and I was getting a lot of work off of Elance, which I think is called,
Upwork.
Upwork. Yeah. Yes. So I was getting a lot of projects there, fairly low paying because I didn't have a lot of background, but I was getting practice. I was getting experience. I was learning how to work with clients. I was figuring kind of the business out. And I got to a point where I said, okay, I think that I can make a go of this. And so I worked really, really hard for a really long time to make a go of it. And here I am.
So, but because it's very interesting, there's a lot of people listening who are married, you know, their partners, you know, would love them to be happy, but that switch is very difficult. It took me 5 years to go from I'd have to get out to making the jump. I did the side hustle for 5 years. How long did it take you?
About a year.
Oh, wow. That's really quick.
But I worked. Here's the thing. And when people ask me about side hustles and keeping full-time jobs, if you're going to do that, the first thing you have to do is say, I will be the best at my full-time job of anyone there. Because typically what happens is your attention starts to drift and you slide in a few things during your regular work time and you're focused on other stuff. And that you owe better to your employer. You owe better to yourself. And I just think it's a poor way to start. So I worked really, really hard at my job, which was good. But then, you know, I worked every night. I worked most weekends. And I tried to shorten that cycle because there's a certain amount of time it's going to take on your side hustle for you to build it up to where you can make that your real hustle. Mm. And so you can shorten that time by how hard and how much you work. Really like from a guy, he was a skipper of one of the America's Cup winning yacht teams. And he says, never have I seen where doing less than the other guy is a winning strategy or something like that. And so I'm not that smart. I'm not that talented. I had some good experience, but not in writing, but I had other experience. But I can outwork you. And you can always outwork other people, and you can always do a lot. And so I just decided that if I really, really worked hard at it, one, it would help me prove to myself fairly quickly whether there was a business here, because I didn't want it to drag on forever. And two, if there was a business there, well, let's get to that because I don't want to do what it is I'm doing. So when people say to me, hey, what's your best advice about the side hustle thing? Work really hard in your job so that you keep your job and something bad doesn't happen there. But then work really, really hard at your side hustle. And if people will say, well, what about me time?
There is no me time.
Well, me time should be the time that you're putting towards accomplishing something you really want to accomplish. Because isn't that the best me time of all? Me time is not vegging on TV and watching whatever the best of the available options are. Because that's kind of dull. Now, if you have something you really want to watch, that's different. But me time should be what will make me feel good about myself. And what made me feel good about myself was transitioning from I work for somebody else to I work for myself. So there you go. So that's perfect me time.
Yeah, exactly. I would say caveat for the screenwriters listening, watching movies with the screenplay is always a good piece of work to be doing. But it's really interesting because what you're talking about really, it relates to one of the main themes of the book, which is everybody wants this kind of lightning strike success, inspiration, the new career to pop out the sky. But you emphasize routine and process. And, you know, those kind of words that aren't very sexy. You know, people want the sexy success, the seven-figure deal. So why are routine and process more important for achievement?
I guess the real premise of that comes from, and we'll probably get to this, but I'm lucky enough now that I get to meet some really, really successful people and talk to them about how they got there. And I don't know, none of them ever describe this little lightning bolt moment or this, you know, I hacked my way to success or, you know, I found the shortcut that got me there. Every one of them worked harder than everyone else around them. And they had a goal. They figured out how they were going to get there. And they were relentless about not focusing on the goal, but focusing on what they did every day that would get them to that goal. And so for me, process is how you win. Process is how you succeed because it weeds out all of the other stuff like talent or education or connections and all those things that people say, wow, I don't have these things. And if I did, life would be great. Mm-hmm. Well, you get those things by your process. And so for me, you know, I wrote some bizarre stuff along the way. Like, you know, I get to work with really cool people now, but I wrote a book about hydroponics and I've tried to repress that experience because I never want to think about growing plants and water again. Probably the most unusual one. Oh, I wrote a book about like card tricks. I didn't know any card tricks. Wrote a book about card tricks. How sexy is that? It's not, but it paid and it helped me learn. The most unusual one is I wrote a book. It was personal finance for exotic dancers.
Ooh.
Seriously?
That's brilliant.
Yeah, and it didn't have any pictures.
Very which, niche. You know,
probably hurt its sales. And I can actually talk about that experience because I didn't get paid. So anyway, that's what's odd about that is that's the only time in all of that time of doing freelance work that I didn't get paid. And I would go into my gigs saying, look, you don't know me. You don't know whether I'm good or not. So here's the fee. If you're happy with that, you pay me at the end. So I wasn't even taking money up front because I didn't need the money, so to speak, because I had my job. But two, I wanted to prove to people. And that got me past that hurdle of, I don't know how you're going to be. I don't know how you're going to work. I was doing everything ghostwritten. And so the problem with ghostwriting is it's like Fight Club. And the first rule of Fight Club is you can't talk about Fight Club and you can't talk about who you write for. It's really hard to market yourself when you're a ghostwriter. So that was my twist on that. And it worked out really well, which took me way around the barn from your original question. But if I sum that up, it's I just sat there and said, okay, if I want to get to here, what are all my steps? And then I'm going to focus on my steps and I'm going to do the work that gets me there, because then I can look back and say, okay, that worked. And if I'm constantly looking for a hack or a trick or a shortcut or something, you spend all your time looking for that and you don't develop the skill you need to actually be the thing that it is you want to be.
And it's funny because I actually think, you know, your manufacturing background, because I worked in manufacturing, I worked in business process engineering, you know, back in the day, and worked in factories and with robots and, you know, making stuff. And when you and that you really learn in a manufacturing plant, that things have to happen in an order, and if they keep happening in an order, you have a business. And why should it be any different with brain work and writing? But I do want to ask you about your process for writing, because obviously as a freelance writer, ghostwriter, you have to do the words, like you say, even if it's a project you don't really care that much about. So what's your process for getting the words done?
that's interesting, and it actually ties to a theme that's in my book where I talk about when you do something for long enough, you become the thing that you are trying to do. I had a very rigid process early on, and it was, okay, I've got this number of hours today. I knew what I needed to get done. I played it like manufacturing, and I said, okay, here's my target. I want this much per period of time. I'm not going to allow reflection time and stuff, because I could think about what I needed to write somewhere else and come in. And I even had a word target. But what I would do is, if I didn't get to my target within the time I had, that meant I had to stay up late. Because I was going to get to that target. Mm. And I know that sounds, for people that feel that, you know, some of the creativity and inspiration and things like that have to come to you, which I do think is true, and so therefore you're forcing it, I think there is some success to be found in forcing, because it's easy to sit there and say, wow, I don't quite have this figured out, so I'm going to walk away. Sometimes you figure it out when you stay on it and you keep chugging, and suddenly the places you wanted to go, they actually do reveal themselves. But they don't reveal themselves if you are not there doing it. They don't for me anyway. Now, every once in a while, I do have a cool thought when I'm away, and I'll think, oh, that's the way to handle that. Half the time, I forget it. By the time I get back to where I was, it pisses me off. But I think that, you know, there's lots of research that shows that people that are the most innovative, they're not dreamers and tinkerers, and they're not floating off in the cloud somewhere. They're doing the work every single day. Mm-hmm. And the good ideas come out of the bad ideas, but it's a numbers game of sorts. And so for me, that process was, it was a numbers game, and I'm going to do a certain amount, partly because I had deadlines, but also I'm going to do a certain amount. And if it takes me longer to do that, then boo on me. And I need to learn to be more efficient. And I do think you can be a more efficient writer. You know, there are productivity things you can do as a writer, and that should be part of your job, because the less time it takes you to do quality work, the better.
Yeah.
Which is what everyone wants.
Yes. Now you've set it up so people want your productivity tips for writing. I can hear my audience going, oh, he's mentioned there are productivity tips. So now you have to tell us. Just give us a couple of yours.
Okay. What I typically do then is, let's say I'm writing an article, because I write for Inc. Let's say I'm writing an article. I have to know, I have my first paragraph in my head before I start, for instance. I have three or four things. Usually they're in my head now, but I used to bullet out three or four things. And I would have this little quick map on the side that said, okay, here's my first paragraph. Roughly, here's the four things I want to get across. Here's how I want to tie it up, because you can only accomplish so much in an article. Those are my things. So now stick them on my document and let's flesh them out. And it actually worked really well instead of trying to be linear. So if point 0.4 was easy to write, I started with point 0.4, which usually made point 0.3 easier, because when you've got practice, you know, you get to the point where you go, oh, okay, I already can figure out how I can tie this, and then that figures out how to tie that, and it all comes together in your head if you have a little bit of a map. So, and then the other thing that I do, I'll give you one more. If I'm writing a 700-word article, if I can't write it in 25 minutes and have it be 98% right, I stop. Because I haven't figured out what I want to say. And that's the bane of most writers' existence, is not, you know, I feel like writer's block, if there is such a thing, because I don't think there is, but if there is such a thing, it's just because you haven't figured out what you want to say. Maybe you haven't figured out who your audience is. Maybe you haven't figured out who your client is if you're writing for somebody else. There's all kinds of variables, but ultimately you haven't figured out what you want to say. If you know what you want to say, it should flow. If you've put in the time and effort to get good at your craft to where you can translate what's in your head down to your fingers.
To the page. Well, then I'm really interested in what's the difference between, because exactly what you said, this kind of bullet points, understanding what you want to say. Fiction writers do the same thing.
Sure.
You know what you want to say before you say it. Same with dictation. I think in general, it's that thinking process. But you've ghostwritten books, you write a lot of articles, you've got your own book. So what was the difference between, you know, the difference in writing process with your own book compared to ghostwriting other people's and, say, the articles you do?
I am much better at doing work for other people and meeting their deadlines than I am for my own. Because it's really easy to, you know, I'm working on my own thing and there's a deadline, but then if something comes up or somebody needs something, I like to please. And so pleasing myself is kind of boring, but coming through for someone else is really cool. And so I was terrible about being rigid about what I needed to do for myself. So I would find myself in these little periods where it's like, oh crap, I'm really behind, you know, and I have to do my own thing. And my editor will agree that I was really terrible at that. So I haven't, to be honest, I haven't figured that part out really well. For Ink, when I write articles for Ink, that's pretty easy because they don't take me that long. And I do those, I write something every day for Ink. I don't always publish it, but I'm at least knocking out one thing a day. That's just what I do. I don't even have to think about it. And so that kind of goes. And then I do some other stuff. But then, like with my book, that was always last. And I think for a lot of people, if you write for clients and then you try to transition to doing some of your own stuff, it is a really hard transition to make because you will always put yourself last. And somehow you have to find a way to say, okay,
here's how I do.
I'm first now. So what I eventually did, to answer your question again in a really long-winded way, I eventually carved out days and said, okay, like Sunday is just my book day and not going to do anything else. And I would have my wife help me. You know, she would say, okay, are you ahead enough that you can just do that? You know, she would kind of prime me, and I would just pick out days and said, this is the only thing I can do. Sometimes it was because I planned it, and sometimes it was because it was necessity, where I was like, the only thing I can do is my book. Yeah. So, yeah. But it's hard. And I think that's a struggle for a lot of people is not, it's too, I don't know. It's hard to put yourself first, but you have to, if you're going to pull that off.
Yeah, and it fits into the process idea. And one of the quotes from the book I've got here is, the key is to enjoy small, seemingly minor successes on a regular basis. So, I mean, that is difficult. Like you say, seemingly minor success in an increasingly busy publishing environment, writing environment. What are we talking about in terms of measurement, and how do you measure those minor successes?
I don't measure them the way I used to, because again, it's all that part of becoming. So whenever you start something, that's probably the best time for that. And I'll use a non-writing example. Let's talk about running a marathon. Mm-hmm. Say you decide you want to run a marathon. Lots of people would like to, but you're not a runner. So you know that eventually you have to run 26 miles, which you can't right now. So if you go out today and run a mile and you come home and you lay on your couch and feel terrible because you're not a runner and you allow yourself to think about the 26 miles you someday have to run, you're going to quit because the distance from here to there is just too far. Same with if you just, not you, but the listener you, decides they want to write a book. If they sit down and struggle their way through the first 500 words, finally get something on paper, and then look up and go, oh, gosh, and I need 80,000 of these, you'll probably quit. But if you set yourself up and say, okay, what I'm going to do is every day I'm going to do 500 words. They may not be perfect. They may need to be revised. It's just a start. But every day I'm going to do 500 days. And if you just 500 words, if you just focus on that, and don't look out into the distance to the 80,000 you need to get to, then every day you get to feel good about yourself because when you've done your 500, you can go, cool, got my 500. That feels good. I accomplished what I set out to do today, which makes you happy, gives you a little bit of motivation, and it makes it easier to do it again tomorrow because you're feeding off of that cool little virtuous flywheel. So you cannot... People always talk about, you know, you need to have this big goal. You need to have laser-like focus on it. I think you need a big goal, and you let that inform the process that you create that will allow you to achieve that goal, and then you focus on your process. Because if you're checking off your process, every day you get to feel really good about yourself, which is a motivation that you need to keep going. And you can do it forever. It's a really dumb example, but one year I decided that I wanted to do 100,000 push-ups, which I think that's in my book.
Yes, I think it is. Yeah.
I don't know why I picked that. So I broke it down and said, okay, that's 274 push-ups a day. So if I do 274, I'll have 100,000 at the end of the year. It was a meaningless goal. It's not like, because we're taught that goals are supposed to be meaningful and, you know, all that stuff. Well, this is a meaningless goal. Gets me nothing. But I just worked my process and I did 300 a day. So I had a little bit of a buffer in case I had a day I couldn't do it. And within a month, that's just what I did. That was how I did things. And it bugged me the times that I missed it because I couldn't put the little 300 on my spreadsheet that I was adding up. And I didn't have the total at the bottom. I didn't foot my column because I didn't want to look down and go, oh, no, 91,000 more. I just wanted to see that number for that day. And it chugged right along. And so that was fun in itself because every time I did my day, I put my little 300 down, felt really good. Tomorrow's another day. It's the Jerry Seinfeld approach to building a stand-up act where he has his calendar and he puts a red X on every day. He writes a joke and he's got years of these calendars with all these red X's. And it's the accumulation of small wins that gets you to this big place at the very end. And so for writers, I think that's you break down whatever it is you're trying to accomplish into something that has a process. And then you focus really hard on the process, knowing that if you do the process right, the end result takes care of itself in large part, or at least it gets you really close so that then when you get there, you can say, okay, I've got this body of work. I've got this book. It's not perfect, but now I have something to fix.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's so true. I think that, you know, we'll keep circling back to process. It's not magical. It's not a magical process to write a book. I mean, there is an element, some kind of spark of something, but it is a process to get the work done. But it's funny because, you know, there you're talking about the daily little checkbox or the number, but you've also got this section in the book titled One Question Provides Nearly Every Answer, which is actually about the big picture and strategy and long-term thinking. So, and I know that authors are far more likely to get obsessed with like Amazon rankings and don't step back. So what are your tips for that stepping back and working on strategy and long-term?
The point of that question is mainly it's great for warding off temptation. So the genesis of that came from Herb Kelleher. He's the CEO of Southwest Airlines. Makes 8,000 decisions a day, which seems like it would be an impossible job. But he basically asks himself one question to everything that comes to him. Will this make Southwest Airlines the low-cost provider? If it's yes, we'll look at that. If it's no, well, then we're not going to mess with that because that's not what we're focused on. So it's that kind of question is perfect when you're trying to accomplish something big and you're tempted to slough off. Like, say, in my marathon example, if you're like, wow, I don't really want to run today. Is skipping a workout what a person that wants to run a marathon would do? No. So go do your thing. If you're trying to write a book and your goal is 500 words a day and you're Stephen King, who does it every day, and you don't want to do it today. Wow. Is being a published author, would a published author not write today? No. So there you go. So it's a big picture way of kind of framing things down. If you're trying to lose weight, is a person trying to lose weight going to have a second piece of chocolate cake? No. So it's a perfect way to kind of frame that to allow you to say, all right, what do I really want to accomplish here? And does whatever this temptation is allow me to do that? And if the answer is no, well, then it's really clear. Otherwise, if you kind of loosen that up, you know, you can play the game of, well, yeah, I'm trying to lose weight. So if I have that other piece of chocolate cake, well, I'll run tomorrow. I'll do this tomorrow. I'll do whatever. And you negotiate with yourself. And we're really good at negotiating with ourselves, but we're not very good at coming through on the end result of the negotiation. That's really hard.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the premise of that. So again, it goes back to what is your big goal? So you said, you know, if there's writers out there they're trying to get to some place, what is it that you want to accomplish? Are you trying to write a novel? Okay. Frame your life around the fact that you want to write a novel and you are going to do so. It's not a dream. It's not an idea, because an idea without action is a dream. Idea should be a verb, I think.
Yes, two idea.
You should.
Well, it's otherwise, it's just a dream.
Right. So figure out what that is that you want to do and then say, what does a person who accomplishes that goal do? Mm. And then don't try to reinvent the wheel. Don't try to come up with some special bespoke process that works for your individual. We're not that individual. We're all about the same. See what other people have done and say, you know what? For right now, I'm going to model that. And someday when I get through, if I look at it and say, well, you know, that worked for me, but I could tweak that a little bit. You can tweak it based on experience, not based on, I don't really feel like doing it that way. Because usually when you say, I don't feel like doing it that way, what you're really saying is that I don't feel like accomplishing what I want to accomplish. So I seem to be the king of really long answers today.
No, it's great. No, it's really good. And
the goal is you figure out your goal, figure out what people do to achieve that, and then model yourself.
Yeah. And I think that modeling is really important. And I did that way back when I was way back. So I'm so old now, but 10 years ago, when I decided I wanted to leave my job and make a living online and be a writer, I found people to model and have continued to find people to model at different points on the journey. But it's interesting because you've got this thing called the one question, which I get, and we've just talked about that, but also, and I like the book, The One Thing by Gary Keller, right? It's a good book. But you also, like me, are what many people are now calling a multi-passionate, as in, you know, you're writing your books, you're ghostwriting, you're speaking, you're an editor, you're writing articles, you know, you do all these different things too. And I struggle with this all the time because I write under three different names. I'm a podcaster. I'm now taking speaker off my list, but, you know, I do a lot of things. So how do you balance this one question with being multi-passionate?
Well, I like to call what you just described a serial achiever, which means you're either achieving, you do one thing, get to a point where you're like, wow, I've gotten really good at that, but I'd like to do something else. That's cool. Mm-hmm. Or you can do multiple things at the same time. But it's you can balance them out however you want, and they actually work in harmony with each other really well. So, like, if you pretend that I'm Amazon, because Amazon has, they didn't coin the term, but there's a flywheel effect to the Amazon business. Mm. And I promise I'm going to get to a point. So they're selling stuff online. Free shipping makes people more likely to buy, which increases their business. More people going to Amazon causes the Fulfilled by Amazon folks. That's like, if you decide to sell a product on Amazon, you can do so and they'll fulfill it for you. That gets more of those, which gets more customers, which gets more people that want free shipping, which gets more customers. And so this thing feeds itself. And so, like, for me, I write for Inc. because that was a way for me to basically advertise my ghostwriting, because it's hard to market yourself when you're a ghostwriter. And I figured that if someone saw something I wrote and liked it and noticed I was a ghostwriter and needed a ghostwriter, they might call me. Worked out really well. And the cool thing is, it is as if Inc. is paying me to advertise my services.
Yeah.
We'll take that. And plus, it's my writing for it, because I'm paid by the page view. And I do really well there. It's very lucrative. So that's part of my flywheel. So that fed to the ghostwriting part. That also got me lots of social media followers. I have 960,000 some followers on LinkedIn or something. That helps me drive traffic to my Inc. articles. That helped a publisher say, wow, he's got a platform. Maybe we should be interested in a book. That having a book, having my Inc. stuff helps my speaking. Because if you like that, speaking helps the other. And so I've got this little flywheel where they seem like they're different pursuits, and they kind of are, but they all feed that one thing, which is I like to write helpful, useful, practical stuff that maybe will help people do something a little better than they were doing before. And if I get lucky and change somebody's life just a teeny, teeny bit, then that's awesome. And that's really what I'm trying to do. And all those things feed that. So if you look at anything that I write, it's all intended to be practical, useful, helpful. Let me make a difference for you. Let's help you achieve whatever it is you're trying to achieve. That's the kind of place I go. And all those things feed that. And take a step back and say, what am I really trying to accomplish? And then you can make what appear to be different facets actually feed together really well.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, overarching, my goal is make a living with my writing, or make a very good living with my writing, which I think you feel as well. And I actually, I love that you mention your page reads, because I love that the information you put it in the book, how you upped your payments at Inc. by learning copywriting skills. And also, I just realized, I mean, you do these great lists of books, which I link to all the time, especially because you put one of my books in a list.
And why wouldn't I? It was great.
Yes, thank you for that. And I was like, oh wow, this is awesome. So, you know, which is great, obviously, lists linking out to authors is fantastic. But just tell people about that. Why does copywriting skill mean that you get paid more for your articles? Because I think it's brilliant.
Inc. is a media site, and so they have advertising. They have major advertisers that are there. And so when people read articles, then Inc. gets paid by the advertisers because they had views of some of their advertisements. So the more views that Inc. gets, the more money that Inc. can make. So they naturally share that with people like me. And so the more views that I get, the more money that I can make. And so, you know, clearly the goal, if you're doing this, is you would like lots of page views because you get paid that way. Like you said, you wanted to be a writer that got paid well for writing. Me too. So it's, I looked at it and said, okay, what do people like to read? What do they enjoy? What do they benefit from? What do they like to share? And so if you look at my stuff, I have never written a negative thing about anyone ever, partly because that's my personality. I am snarky in person. Like on the side, I can be as sarcastic as anybody. But I don't feel like saying bad things about people in print, because I would just rather not say anything at all. So I'm positive. I don't do controversial stuff. I don't try to clickbait people in. I don't do any of that. I just, if I write something that you benefit from and you think, wow, that's really good for me, you will probably share that with people you care about, because you'll think, you know what? Nancy would really benefit from this, or Nancy would enjoy that. And so that sharing thing is really where I got my audience. You know, it wasn't because Inc. just pushes it in front of people. It was people saying, hey, I like this. I think I will share that. And that's how I ended up being a LinkedIn influencer. Long ago, used to be LinkedIn had like LinkedIn Today, where they would aggregate articles from everywhere. And so the way that they that your stuff ended up on one of their category pages was if a large velocity of LinkedIn users were sharing something in a period of time, and they would say, oh, that's getting a lot of attention, let's pop it over. And I did really well with that. Mm. And so LinkedIn, when they were starting the influencer program where they wanted people to write directly for LinkedIn, which now everyone can do, but at first it was just the influencers, they said, you know, hey, clearly you know how, you know what our audience likes. Would you like to do this? Yes. Don't get paid.
Right.
But it shoved a ton of traffic back over to my Ink stuff. Mm. And it built the platform that we talked about a little bit ago. But it was all because I knew how to write things that people wanted to share with other people. And I don't write stuff that they want to share because it's controversial, yeah, or because it pisses them off, or any of those other things that other people do. And good on them if they do. I don't care. That's not my thing. But if I can help you, then you'll probably share it. And that's how I look at that. So that the genesis of all that, though, was that I looked and said, all right, if I'm going to be in this game, writing for Ink, and I would like to win the game, which means make more money, what do I need to do? And I think that's probably, I don't know if you're going to ask me this, but this, the biggest lesson or biggest thing that I would like people who are freelance writers to take away from this is, if you want to make a good living, you have to take a step back and say, my job is to write what my client wants. My job is not to write whatever satisfies my inner creative person. Do that on your own time. Mm-hmm. My job is to write what other people wanted. And I got a lot of jobs along the way because I was willing to be the contractor that takes the blueprint for the house and builds the house the client asked for instead of, wow, you know, but that's not really how, that doesn't feel good to me. And, you know, I want to express myself and, you know, go express yourself somewhere else. I always say that to people. Seriously, if you are paid to do something, your job is to make the person that paid you be delighted that they hired you. Mm. And if you focus that way and deliver what they want, then you can get work all day long. Mm. So people will, I probably get 10 emails a week where people say, hey, I'm trying to get started and I can't get anybody to hire me. And, you know, it's really a bummer because I really like to write about so-and-so and nobody will hire me to do that. And I'll say, okay, you really like to write about that, but it doesn't sound like anybody needs that or wants to read it. So if you want to get paid, you got to go where the money is. And I don't mean that in a harsh way. It's just, you know, if writing about Mountain Dew bottles is not generating any, nobody cares, then you kind of got to do that for yourself. But if writing about, you know, cell phones is paying, then hey, go do that. Mm. And I know people don't want to hear that, but, you know,
oh, no,
it's,
I
like
think
that it's like that in any profession.
Yes.
You have to do what it is that people need. And if you're good at giving people what they need and want, you're in.
Yeah, fantastic. And no, I think, you know, my audience are used to the business stuff. And I definitely share quite a lot of your articles. I think they're great. And as I say, you link to a lot of books. So if people like reading business books, I think your post, and I'll link to...
I like books. Mm. I like authors.
Yeah, exactly.
And if I read something that I like, I never put anything on any list that I don't like, you know, and that I wouldn't wholeheartedly recommend. And, you know, if I get... I get... People ask me if I will review lots of products. And I'll look at something, and if I don't really like it, then I don't write about it. But if I do, then I say so. Mm. And so, because I don't know what's to be. But for book lists, if I like it, cool. I hope other people read it, because I am decidedly average. Let's put it that way. So I am an average white bread kind of guy. And so if I like something, chances are there are a lot of people that would probably like it too. Mm. You know, because I'm in the middle of that bell curve somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, right.
So you're not supposed to say absolutely to that. You're supposed to say no.
No, I was just thinking. Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm in the middle of that curve as well because I like a lot of the books you like. So I think that works well. But we're out of time. So where can people find you and your books and everything you do and your articles online?
I write for Ink. If you go to ink.com and just search my name, there's about 1600 or so now. I'm on LinkedIn. I connect with people and I'm happy to do so. And I do answer questions. And I mean, I do it in a day, but I do answer questions and I'm happy to help folks. I'm on Twitter, but don't really care about Twitter. Twitter is not a good social platform for me or for the stuff that I do. So, and my book is wherever you want to find it.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for your time, Jeff. That was great.
Thank you. Thanks.
So I hope you enjoyed the interview with Jeff today. It's always fascinating to hear how other people are making money with their writing in all kinds of ways. So I hope you got some ideas. Next week, I have an interview on how to get your book into schools and double your income with volume sales with Dave Hendrickson. Now, even if you're not writing for school-age kids, you will find it fascinating from a print publishing point of view, as we talk about the money side of how to manage a print run and sell with bulk sales direct to businesses or schools or whatever. And this bulk sales business model is something I am fascinated with. And in fact, at the Book Baby conference that I'm speaking at in November in Philadelphia in the US, I'm really looking forward to meeting Brian Judd, who has written about this bulk sales model. And of course, it's a sales model where you need to be more interested in money than ego, because there is no ranking. These sales do not appear on any bestseller list. They are not tracked. They are direct to consumer. So really interesting chat with Dave. It's something that I'm definitely thinking about. So I hope you find this useful coming up next week. So have a wonderful writing week and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.